New York City is taking the next step in its life sciences leadership with Spark Kips Bay, a first-of-its-kind innovation, jobs, and education center, and we want you to be a part of it. New York City Economic Development Corporation is welcoming proposals from future-focused partners to help create Spark Kips Bay's academic, healthcare, and life sciences campus in Manhattan. Visit edc.nyc/sciencepark to get involved.
You're listening to The Top Line, brought to you by Fierce Pharma and Fierce Biotech. I'm your host, Ayla Ellison. In this episode, we explore the European biotech investment landscape. The biotech IPO window may be gradually reopening this year, but away from the US biotech hubs, how are investors viewing the European biotech scene? To answer that question, Fierce Biotech's James Waldron sits down with Maina Bauman, partner in the Sofinnova Capital Strategy. She provides insights into how investors are approaching the European biotech sector. Let's dive into the conversation now.
Hi, this is James Waldron from Fierce Biotech. I'm here with Maina Bauman, a partner for Capital Strategy at Sofinnova Partners. Maina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, James. Thanks for having me.
I want to spend some time today looking at how investors are viewing the European biotech scene in 2024. But first, perhaps you can tell our listeners a little about Sofinnova Partners and your role within it, so we can get a sense of the size and scope of the firm.
Yeah, very happy to. Sofinnova Partners, one of the largest European venture capital funds. We have over 2.6 billion under management. It started very much as a traditional company building firm, and we have now grown to have seven strategies under management, and we have three pillars. We have the acceleration, the build, and the growth aspects, and within that we have multiple strategies. So within acceleration, we have two acceleration vehicles: MD Start, which is our medtech accelerator, and then we also have BioVelocita, which is a more recent biopharma accelerator. And then within the, we have the capital strategy, which is now in its 10th iteration. And we've also got some more recent funds, like the Digital Medicine Fund, which we closed a 200 million euro fund recently. And then we've also got the Sofinnova Telethon Fund, which is a dedicated fund to investing in Italy. And so we have a number of different funds under the umbrella, and that's to really to cover what we think are the whole spectrum of the life sciences industry. And we have a fantastic network that's been built over 50 years. And we saw an opportunity to try and address a lot of those opportunities that we see in Europe.
Great. And you're clearly very embedded in the European biotech scene and a kind of major player there. From your point of view, how have things changed over the past few years? I'm assuming you've had a ringside view of the surge of investment we saw at the start of the pandemic in biotech. But has that now subsided, or what kind of position are we at the moment?
Yeah, look, European biotech is still growing. I've been investing in biotech in Europe since 2006. And Sofinnova was one of the very few players that were in the European biotech scene previously. That is now a much more growing sector. We've seen new players come into the market and existing players grow and, like us, develop additional strategies. And so there's a lot more capital within the European system now. We're still a small proportion compared to the US. I think Europe really did come into its own, and people started to notice European biotech during the pandemic because of BioNTech, because of other things that were being generated during, and actually the leadership role that the UK played during the whole COVID vaccine era. It became noticed by others, but we've been investing in Europe for quite a lot of time. We have seen generalists come and go in Europe. There is strong investment appetite from investors, from specialist investors into the European biotech scene, primarily because there's great science in Europe and because of the leadership role that some of us as Sofinnova, but also other colleagues are doing, we are taking a leadership role in helping build some of these companies, then that attracts other investors into the market as well.
And so in terms of the makeup of those investors, you mentioned maybe some of those generalists withdrawing. Have you found that post-pandemic, there is that sense that investors already now understand the value of biotech and they maybe don't need persuading to look into this sector? Or is it, do you still need to hold people's hands sometimes because there's any concerns about, you know, volatility or a bad trial kind of throwing a company off course?
I think the generalists have come and gone. They've come back and they understand the sector. They understand the value of Europe, but they don't necessarily, just like we've seen in the US, the generalists came out of the sector as soon as interest rates it started rising. And they will be back again because the reality is that healthcare is not going anywhere and innovation within healthcare is paramount. Generalists will come and go from the sector. Specialists within the sector remain and are only growing. And so we definitely believe that there is a lot of opportunity in Europe to continue to invest. We continued to invest through, well, 2023 was a little bit of a challenging year. We continued to invest, as did many of our European colleagues in the European biotech sector. We do slightly follow the US in terms of there was a little bit of a dip in the markets in 2023, maybe a lot of a dip, but the reality is the fundamentals remain strong. Pharma need to buy biotech companies and biotech products. The demographics mean that we have a lot more chronic disease. So the fundamentals remain strong. And I believe that we do need generalists. It's not that we don't need generalists, but as long as the specialists continue to invest in the sector, there is a sector and there will be a different makeup of investors depending on timing.
And last year, we saw some European-focused firms like Forbion and BioGeneration Ventures announce what they said were their largest biopharma funds to date. So that gives a sense that there is that healthy appetite there that you're describing. That's something you've seen then, that it's still easy to bring in those money and those partners.
As you saw with Forbion's fundraise, BGV's fundraise, our own fundraise with the New Digital Medicine Fund, with BioVelocita, there is appetite and people recognize that there is high quality science and high quality innovation happening within Europe. And it's underrepresented, if you think about it. We have a small fraction of the money that is going into US biotech, yet we have equivalent, if not better, science, but with a fraction of the money going towards that translation. And that's what we strongly believe in. And so do some of our colleagues like Forbion and BGV and others. And you're definitely seeing LPs understand that and continue to invest. And also pharma understand that the amount of funding that is going towards Europe, because it's very untapped as compared to the amount of money that they're spending in the US. And so you're seeing a move even from pharma to try to invest and find opportunities in Europe.
You're talking about, you're comparing to the US scene there. Obviously, in the first few months of the year, we've seen a string of biotechs go public, bucking that kind of frozen IPO scene that we saw more of in 2023. And some notable examples like CG Oncology really seem to be thriving on the NASDAQ already. So suggesting there is a successful route there that's opened back up. Does that encourage investors on the other side of the Atlantic looking to European biotech? Or is there still quite a difference in terms of you don't assume that success from US peers means that that's a path for Europe?
Yeah, biotech is global. So we're all trying to develop drugs that are going to be used globally. We don't have as much of a thriving European public market. It doesn't matter where in Europe, it's a more fragmented system. However, European privates do reflect a lot of what happens in the US. And you're definitely seeing a renewed, maybe not from announced deals, but you're seeing much more enthusiasm again for biotech and a renewed enthusiasm for investing in late stage, but also early stage companies. And that's a combination of both the public markets opening up a little bit, but also a reflection on the M&A. And I think a bigger reflection in my mind on the M&A that's happening rather than necessarily just the public markets opening up. Because the public markets are more driven by, I think, the fact that interest rates look like they might be coming down. And so there's a bit more renewed enthusiasm on that side.
And you mentioned that, of course, in a biotech, it's a global industry. Is there any difference or any extra value placed on European biotechs that also have a US footprint? Is that something that investors consider, or is it not really relevant, the geographical basis?
So most of us who build biotech companies are building them for global consumption. And therefore, yes, many of our companies build teams that are a bit more global and do actually recruit and have a US presence. And that tends to be access to specific expertise that might be needed. It's also being slightly closer to some of the acquirers or investors, etc. I think it's not that you will only invest in a company because it has a US presence or that makes it a better company. It's just that as the company grows, it needs expertise, and that expertise may not be available in the local market. And therefore, they tend to build a little bit closer. Some of the US investors also prefer to have people that are closer to them. And so therefore, some of these companies end up with both a US and a European presence. Also, a lot of the companies tend to do a lot of their clinical studies in the US as well. And therefore, there's also a need for sort of US presence from feet on the ground in order to execute on that.
And then in terms of valuations, do you see a difference in how these companies are valued, whether they're based in Europe or the US?
At the moment, European companies still have a lower valuation. That's actually a selling point for us because there's the opportunity to invest at that. I think a lot of European companies also don't spend as much money or it doesn't cost as much to get to the same endpoint. So I think on both those fronts, we think that Europe is very attractive. And that's also one of the reasons that some of the US investors are looking more towards European companies because valuations are better. The companies have generally not raised as much capital and so have been efficient at getting to that value inflection point.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I wondered, is there anything else that investors are looking out for now that maybe has changed over the last few years? So is there any more emphasis on hard data? Or you said geographical placement probably isn't as important, but is the stage in pipeline or having an asset already in the clinic, has that become more valuable in some cases?
Yeah, we continue to invest in novel, interesting companies that are developing and novel pipelines with very differentiated products. But I think products have become much more important, at least in the more recent past. And because if we think about going back to the M&A side of things, on the M&A side, people have been acquiring later stage products. And therefore, when you think about a market sort of recovering, there's been an initial interest in more product-focused companies. That's not to say that platforms are not interesting, but I think platforms with a product is where people are focusing their efforts at this stage. I think some of the very early platforms or the more novel platforms have taken a little bit longer to get people excited about.
Yeah, that makes sense. Anecdotally, we've been seeing an increase in the number of companies announcing extension rounds rather than a fully fresh series of funding. Is that a trend that you've noticed as well?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, look, I think 2023 was difficult to get new investors into deals. And that's still a little bit of a reflection of that. And the reality is that if you're close to that next value inflection point, the existing investors, if you've built goods in, then you might as well continue to invest in those opportunities rather than going and investing in new opportunities or bringing in an investor where the valuation question becomes an important one. So yes, we have definitely seen more extension rounds happen, and we'll probably continue to see some of that until there's a bit more of a recovery and people continue to invest further and new money starts to flow in.
And you did mention earlier big pharma M&A, there's acquisitions of smaller biotechs as a trend to look at in addition to the IPO window kind of starting to reopen this year. I wondered if we could dig into that a little bit. Is that where a lot of investors are really seeing the companies they invest in as an endpoint path for those companies to actually to be acquired by a bigger fish, essentially, as opposed to go public, as might have been the case in previous years?
At Sofinnova, we've historically had both routes of exit in mind, and we actually have data that suggests we've got exits 50-50 historically, and it does depend on the market and where things are. We build our companies so that we can have an exit either which way, either public or private. But you have to think about what's going on in Big Pharma, and what's going on in Big Pharma is that there is a patent cliff and they do have to replace a fair amount of revenue. And therefore, they are looking towards biotech to find interesting assets and de-risk assets initially to help replace some of that revenue.
And then I just wanted to end by looking ahead. I know its predictions are not maybe not too easy to do in this climate, but do you have a sense of where you're expecting the European biotech scene and investor sentiment to end up later in the year? Could we be seeing more IPOs? Could we be seeing more European biotechs go public potentially? Or what do you think are the trends that are going to be coming up?
I don't have a crystal ball, but if the last few months are anything to go by, I think there is a recovery happening, and we're definitely seeing more of a move towards continued investment, and we're seeing some of our US friends open offices in London and thinking about offices elsewhere. So we're seeing a renewed interest in biotech in Europe, and I definitely believe that we have the scientific innovation happening, and so I'm a big believer that we will continue to get investment in Europe, and we ourselves are actively investing. We made 9 investments last year. We're on track probably to do a similar amount, if not more, this year. So we are actively investing, and we see our colleagues in the industry actively investing. So I do believe that. I expect if the markets are open, European biotechs will also take advantage of that and go public. I think my view is we will see later stage companies like we have with CG Bio Oncology and some of the other ones, more later stage companies go public. I don't believe we will see very early stage companies go public in the next year or so. That hopefully will happen, but will not necessarily happen in 2024.
Well, on that optimistic note, I'm afraid we'll have to end it there. Maina, thanks so much for that fascinating conversation. You've certainly given us a lot to think about as we look ahead to the rest of the year. I know that with our articles, we'll be speaking to you again later on to see whether those predictions come true and to pay more attention to the European investment scene in biotech. So thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for The Top Line. I'm your host, Ayla Ellison. You can find out more about this topic in our show notes at fiercebiotech.com. Look for podcasts. And that's The Bottom Line from The Top Line.